Before we get to the markets, with stock futures mixed at the moment, the latest on a federal government shutdown that came and went like a thief in the night. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. President Trump is set to sign a budget bill that will allow a normal business day to begin for the federal government here. This is the morning the country woke up to alerts saying the government had shut down overnight after Republican Rand Paul spoke off and on in the Senate over a nine-hour period against the stopgap funding plan overnight. He objects to all the borrowing. Let's turn to a veteran federal budget watcher, Stan Collender, a Forbes columnist who also tweets at The Budget Guy. Morning, Stan.
Good morning. Interesting evening.
Yeah, you were up all night watching this. It was a government shutdown.
Yeah, there was a shutdown, but nobody noticed. It kind of goes back to the old 60s saying, what if you gave a war and no one came? What happens if you gave a shutdown and no one noticed?
All right, but the House has passed something. It's going to go to President Trump for signature shortly. How long does it go? Is this the big omnibus bill that takes us out 2 years?
No, there's a little bit of a misconception about this. While it provides spending caps, raised amount of dollars that Congress is allowed to spend, the spending bill only lasts until March 22nd. So 6 weeks from now, you and I could be talking again about the potential for another government shutdown.
All right. But hopefully they're going to be working on that longer-term plan by then, a plan that I think the first word that comes to mind is not austere.
I think those are two words, but with dynamic scoring, it's probably just one. You're right. Yeah, this is serious amounts of additional money coming on top of a $1.5 or $2 trillion tax cut. It's almost $300 billion in domestic and defense spending. On top of that, they added up almost $90 billion for disaster relief, additional money for child health and a variety of other things. So we're talking about a significant amount of spending and budget deficits, annual deficits, that are probably going to reach between $1.2 and $1.4 trillion. And that's only what we know now. If there's another disaster, it'll be even higher.
Now, the president proposes, Congress appropriates, but on Monday, we have the 2019 budget plan from the White House. So you're going to be all ears?
Look, I've been working on the budget in one form or another for 40 years. This will be the most irrelevant presidential budget we've ever seen. It was put together, you know, over the last several months based on lower caps, on a different economy, on a variety of things that Congress just changed today but won't be included in the president's budget. The best thing the president could do would be to postpone the delivery of his budget to Congress, go back, redo it, take a month, get it right. Presidential budgets are declared dead on arrival. This one was dead before typesetting.
Stan Collender is a columnist for Forbes. He's also executive vice president of Corvus MSL Group and tweets at The Budget Guy. Stan, thank you.
My pleasure.
So the government is set to reopen after being technically closed overnight, but global markets were open. The S&P future is up 0.1% now, but the Dow future is down 0.1%. And after the Dow fell 4.2%, more than 1,000 points yesterday, Asian markets took their cue. Here's Marketplace's Jennifer Pak in Shanghai.
Asian investors were also concerned about the rising bond yields in the U.S. Japan's Nikkei fell 2.8%. Hong Kong's Hang Seng Index was down 3.1%. Mainland Chinese stocks suffered as well. Even though the markets are mostly separated from the global financial system, the Shanghai Composite Index fell 4.1%. That's the biggest drop since August 2015. Investors are jittery about a number of domestic factors, such as margin calls and high valuations, but they're also rushing to sell off shares ahead of the Lunar New Year, which begins next Friday. The country needs a lot of cash during this holiday period. It's the time of year when companies typically need to pay bonuses and people exchange money and gifts.
Jennifer, thank you. A fall of 10% from a recent high on the stock market is dubbed a correction. I just checked the math on the S&P 500. It's down 290 points from its last high. That was January 26th. So as of this morning, it's down 10.1%. That's what correction means. But what does it mean? Here's Marketplace's Ryan Kailoff.
Well, nothing on its face. 10% is just a nice, easy, round number that everyone can agree, oh, this is meaningful now. Fun fact, a correction is 10% and a bear market becomes official at 20%. Anyway, the two words you often hear together are correction and healthy, which seems like an oxymoron, especially if it's 10% of your holdings. But the reason that analysts and a Fed governor and other experts have been calling this a healthy correction is because they believe the market was running too hot. Stocks were overpriced and this correction was needed to bring investors back down to earth. Now, those same experts agree the fundamentals of the economy are still strong, and it's important to remember that corrections like this happen pretty regularly, usually about once a year.
the prospect of higher interest rates as the U.S. and other large economies heat up and more borrowing by the federal government has driven many investors out of stocks, but bonds have also been volatile. This morning, the yield on the 10-year note has eased a bit. It's down below 2.84% when it was down at nearly 2% 5 months ago. Fewer people watched the Super Bowl the other night than a year earlier. Now NBC will break with Olympic tradition tonight by live streaming over digital devices the opening ceremony for the Winter Games in South Korea. It's one of several aggressive strategies, Marketplace's Renata Sego reports.
This sound once prompted people to run to the living room TV for primetime Olympic coverage. It now signals what NBC is calling its most live Winter Olympic Games ever, with streaming online and coverage through Snapchat. There's even live primetime viewing on both U.S. coasts. Marty Conway teaches sports management at Georgetown.
This is what NBC and Comcast are now looking at, is a multi-device, multi-stream, multi-channel environment and allow consumers to pick where they would like to consume.
NBC paid $963 million for the U.S. rights to these games. That's part of a roughly $4.4 billion package for Olympic rights through 2032. Jason Lynch with Adweek says thinking across devices may be a win for NBC's return on investment.
This has opened it up to brands who may not have broadcasted the Olympics otherwise, who are targeting kind of the younger demos that will go on Snapchat.
The media industry, though, is still trying to figure out how to measure audience in that new multi-platform universe. I'm Renata Sego for Marketplace.
And Amazon is reportedly about to go head-to-head with UPS and FedEx with its own Amazon package delivery service. That according to a Wall Street Journal story that just hit the wires. Our executive producer is Nicole Childers. Our digital producer is Janet Wynn. Our engineer this week is Ben Tolliday. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.